Section 3, The Last Years of the War. As you read, look for the removal of state government to new capitals, two governors who served Louisiana during difficult times, the purpose of the Emancipation Proclamation, events of April 1865 that ended the war and created an uncertain future for all people of the South, terms, Chicory, Emancipation Proclamation, Assassination. The Confederate losses of Vicksburg and at Gettysburg turned the tide of war in the Union's favor, but the conflict continued for another year and a half. In Louisiana, the troops, the government, and displaced civilians, both free and slave, were on the move in the last years of the war. Government in exile. When Baton Rouge surrendered to Union forces in May 1862, Governor Moore was forced to move the state government. He relocated first to Opelousas and then to Shreveport. Serving as governor through most of the war, Moore was working under extreme hardship. Louisiana provided its required number of soldiers to the Confederacy, but this left Moore very little manpower to protect the people. On one occasion, a Confederate officer confiscated weapons and ammunition Moore had purchased for home defense. Still, Moore persevered and was instrumental in convincing CSA President Jefferson Davis to create a Confederate command in western Louisiana. Major General Richard Taylor was put in charge of the force. Henry Watkins Allen ran unopposed for governor in 1863. When Moore's term ended, Allen took charge of Confederate Louisiana. Allen had volunteered early in the war and had been injured at the Battle of Shiloh. He also fought in the battle to protect Baton Rouge. He was so badly injured there that he had to use crutches for the rest of his life. Despite his injuries, Allen was an energetic and creative leader who served under extremely difficult circumstances. Food and other basic supplies were hard to come by in Confederate-held areas. Allen opened a trade channel with Mexico through Texas. Although some in the Confederacy criticized the decision, the trade route allowed him to exchange cotton for desperately needed food and medicine. Allen also established a group of state stores where citizens could buy supplies at fair prices. He even paid benefits to families whose household heads were serving in the war. The Red River Campaign. During the spring of 1864, Union General Nathaniel Banks led a campaign in which he hoped to take possession of Shreveport. By doing so, he could put the entire state of Louisiana in Union hands. The campaign is generally criticized for poor decision-making on both sides. Confederate Major General Richard Taylor did score one impressive victory over Union forces near Mansfield in early April. However, he was unable to take control of Banks's army as it tried to retreat. Union naval forces also had a difficult time returning down the Red River. In the end, the Red River Campaign yielded little in the way of meaningful military victory. Still, Taylor and other forces pushed Union troops back toward central Louisiana, preventing them from occupying the entire state and from extending Union control into Texas. Life in occupied Louisiana. Government was not the only thing on the move during the war. Many civilians were forced to flee Union forces or, like Kate Stone and her mother, were made refugees when their localities became active war zones. Thus, even those who did not serve in the conflict experienced the chaos of war. People who managed to stay in their homes were subjected to repeated plunder or looting by Union and Confederate forces, who helped themselves to food, animals, and any other items of value. The confiscation of goods was made worse by the fact that it was nearly impossible to buy new goods to replace those taken. Whether they lived in Confederate or Union-occupied Louisiana, people had to be resourceful just to get by. Luxury items like coffee, sugar, and tea became rare. Some resorted to using chicory, a bitter herb whose root was ground to serve as a replacement for coffee. Even basic supplies like paper became rare. One newspaper began to print its news on the back of sheets of wallpaper. Emancipation begins. Former slaves were also on the move. Whether owners moved their slaves to Texas or enslaved people freed themselves, there was no denying that the institution of slavery began to crumble during the war itself. Early in the war, Union forces considered slaves contraband of war and used them as laborers. On January 1, 1863, President Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation went into effect. It was not, as some believe, the end of slavery. Instead, Lincoln's proclamation was a war measure designed to create havoc, chaos, or confusion, because it only freed slaves in Confederate-occupied areas. Because the proclamation applied only to slaves in Confederate-held locations, technically, it did not apply to slaves in Union-occupied Louisiana. Despite its limited nature, there is no doubt that the Emancipation Proclamation changed the course and nature of the war. As one historian has written, it transformed the war from one to restore the Union into one to destroy the old Union and build a new one purged of human bondage. The war ends. Abraham Lincoln was re-elected president in November 1864. The Union had dominated the Confederacy in battle for more than a year, and by early 1865, it was clear the war was slowly winding down. The Civil War's official end took place on April 9, 1865. At that time, Confederate General Robert E. Lee surrendered to Union Lieutenant General Ulysses S. Grant in Appomattox Courthouse, Virginia. It took 2 additional months for all the Confederate capitals to surrender. Louisiana's Confederate capital at Shreveport was the last to do so, surrendering on June 2, 1865. Uncertainty at war's end. The war had ended, but questions about what would come next for the still-divided nation were unanswered. Adding to the uncertainty, 5 days after the Confederate surrender at Appomattox Courthouse, President Lincoln was assassinated by an actor and Confederate sympathizer named John Wilkes Booth. Assassination is the murder of a prominent person, usually for political reasons. The president died from his wounds on the morning of April 15, 1865. At a time when strong leadership was needed, uncertainty prevailed in the South as well. The CSA ceased to exist, and its member states were left to fend for themselves. Much of the South's infrastructure had been destroyed by war and occupation. Hundreds of thousands of men were dead and families were left to recover, often with no head of household or one who had been badly wounded. It would take months for many soldiers to make their way home to Louisiana. It would take years for life to return to normal. Even then, the state was never again as it had been before the war, particularly because slavery came to an end. Former slave owners lost not only their laborers, but also the economic value they represented. Based on the average value of slaves in the state in 1860, estimates for the loss in economic terms are as high as $500 million in Louisiana alone. Although they now had their freedom, the former slaves also had a difficult journey ahead. Their fates, which had once been in the hands of their owners, now fell to individuals and families. Many freed slaves went in search of friends or relatives from whom they had been separated. Many couples, some recently reunited, sought formal marriage ceremonies to give their unions the force of law. Many newly freed people migrated to cities like New Orleans, looking for economic opportunities beyond agriculture. Former slaves who stayed in the same locations still had to learn to negotiate for wages with their former masters. Like many white Southerners, Kate Stone had a difficult time accepting Confederate defeat and the end of slavery. A month after the war ended, Kate wrote sadly, "Our glorious struggle of the last 4 years, our hardships, our sacrifices, and worst of all, the torrent of noble blood that had been shed for our loved country, were all in vain. Some disgruntled whites would turn to violence in the years to come. Even those who sought a peaceful post-war Louisiana faced many challenges in a changed society. The process of putting the state and the nation back together would be a long, painful, and sometimes brutal one. It is to that process of reconstructing the South that we now turn." Special feature: the surprising role of salt in the Civil War. Chances are that today you ate one of the most important foods during the Civil War. Can you guess what it is? The answer is salt. Salt is a key ingredient in many food products we eat every day, and it is an essential element in human nutrition. Salt has many other uses, like preserving meat, which was very important before refrigerators were invented. It is also used for dyeing fabric and tanning leather. When the Civil War began in the United States, salt works and salt mines became targets of the Union Army. Union General William Tecumseh Sherman wrote in 1862 that salt is eminently contraband because of its use in curing meats without which armies cannot be subsisted. In other words, if an army doesn't have any salt, it will not be able to feed its soldiers. At the outbreak of the Civil War, New Iberia was one of only 5 places in the entire Confederacy that produced salt. This made the town very important to citizens and the military. On May 4, 1862, the large salt dome at Avery Island was discovered just 10 miles southwest of New Iberia. Today, geologists believe that the salt dome at Avery Island is as deep as Mount Everest is tall. The discovery of Avery Island salt dome was very significant as the salt shortage grew in the Confederacy. The limited salt supply was rationed in the military and also to civilians. In Georgia, salt was reported to sell for $125 per bag if it could be found at all. In Texas, a donkey load of salt cost 2.25 ounces of gold. Soon after the Avery Island discovery, the Confederate Army stationed 2 companies of infantry soldiers and 1 section of artillery to defend the salt mine from Union forces. However, on April 17, 1863, Union forces led by General Nathaniel P. Banks captured Avery Island and ended its salt production for the remainder of the war. Salt became increasingly scarce in the Confederacy as the Civil War continued. This made preserving meat almost impossible. In the end, the Union's war on salt was just part of its war on the economy of the Confederacy. How do you think the war might have changed if the Union had not targeted salt works and salt mines?